Hi, this is Vinay, along with my co-host Nirav Desai, Kirby Shibaga, and producer Stephen Chu. Welcome to XRC Pod. In this episode, we conclude our two-part series on brain-computer interface, Brain Matters, how brain-computer interfaces extend reality. We're joined by industry experts, Chief Commercial Officer Kim Olds, and President and Neuroscientist Olivier Ollier of Emotive, a leading company in BCI products and solutions. Make sure to check out episode one, where we lay the foundation for what is BCI and its fascinating use cases. In part two, we go deeper and discuss the future of work, how we can adapt the workplace to the employee, future product designs, and some of Emotive's innovations in the market today. For example, earbuds that can actually collect brain data and so much more. This is super exciting. So let's jump back in. So can we talk a little bit just on some of the technologies that Emotive is building that allows such complex interactions to turn into a product that you can actually sell and commercialize?
Kim is going to give you the details, but as a premise, think about it. You can have the best tech in the world. We're amongst tech geeks here. You will love it. I mean, but you can have the best tech in the world. If people don't use it, your tech is useless. So technologically, you can be on top of it. The limiting factor will always be the human factor, whether people adopt the technology or not. And this has been something that Emotive has worked a lot around, from the form factor to the offer, the ecosystem. But Kim can speak much better about it than I do.
Yeah, so, you know, we start with the hardware because you can actually measure what's happening in the brain without sensors on the head. And so we've got a platform of hardware spanning hardcore research with 32 and 16 sensors to more now prosumer, consumer-friendly devices and form factors that are more familiar and as frictionless as possible as of a form factor as EEG brain sensing devices can be. We provide an SDK, so a software development kit that allows people to access the API. And, you know, there's certainly a component of that that's open for the hackers and tinkers and developers to work on open source projects. We've got software that reveals the data and allows researchers to be able to collect the data. And then more recently, we just launched, one of our newest products, which is Labs, and that's really providing an open source, crowdsource platform for people that have our devices around the world to participate in research, all from their home or, you know, from their couch, basically, or desk. And there's Labs available on our website right now, and you can log on, conduct a couple different tests. We did a brain versus virus test a couple months ago, but basically observing your brain and helping you to learn more about it.
And I think it's what's important also is that we love our community. We interact a lot with our community, and we owe a lot with researchers that have made us who we are and where we are. That my biggest pride working with Emotive is that an independent study referenced more than 4,000 scientific publications that are using our technology. If you go to Google Scholars, there are more than 8,000 that are referenced, that are validating our technology. And because we owe it to researchers to have tested our technology, published with it, given us feedback, we also cared about what happened to a lot of neuroscientists around the world because of COVID, when the labs, their scientific labs shut down, their universities shut down, and they stopped collecting data. And this is why with our team who's worked, literally around the clock, we gotta give the props and the kudos to our incredible teams around the world for creating a platform that is going to allow researchers around the world in neuroscience to collect data remotely and for them to be able to resume data collection in neuroscience thanks to our platform, thanks to our technology, because we wouldn't be where we are without the scientists, and we owe it to the scientists. They're a big part of our community. We also work with the industry, with gamers, with a lot of people. But it was important for us, given the disruption that COVID has created everywhere, including in scientific research, to help and support the community of neuroscientists that has been so engaged with Emotive over the past 10 years.
Yeah, this is amazing, this chat. So many questions in my mind. One thing I really like is, opening up access to this important data. Sort of reminds me of Research Kit that Apple brought out for the iPhone, just so they could get tens of thousands of participants in a study instead of dozens. But one question that I think more people are becoming aware of and thinking about, and there's some talk, political talk even, to say, should users be paid for their data? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Or
so right now, we aren't selling anybody's data. When you talk about privacy and data security, for Emotive, we've maintained that data is owned by that person unless they implicitly consent to us using the data in any way. That they hold that power. We will look at opportunities in the future for providing the opportunity for users to be able to participate in research. I mean, the concept of participants in a study getting paid, that already happens when somebody goes into a lab and participates in a focus group or some type of research study. They get compensated for that. We don't feel that there should be any difference if we're moving that to an online platform or online structure. But it would have to be with that user-specific implicit consent that they are opting into this study and that they understand the terms for their participation and getting compensated for that.
That's great. Kim, when you talk about the future of work, I know your opinion on a lot of this is it's not about more work. It's about more meaningful work. How do you see the future of work being impacted by BCI and Emotive?
Yeah, I mean, we see the ability to really optimize how we approach work, whether being able to access technology that helps us to be able to understand what our learning process is. You think about the fourth industrial revolution and the fact that, upskilling and learning new ways of interacting within our current jobs once they become automated or leverage new technologies, being able to learn it quickly and in the right format that you need it to be able to really understand it. How do you apply our technology in that context? So, you think about the computer or the content being delivered in a way that best optimizes your ability to learn. So if I've got 10 different applications open on my computer, if it detects that I've got a high stress or my attention is dropped, is there a way for the computer or the software to intuitively adjust and put in front what is most important that I should be paying attention to? I see that as a really interesting application. Setting my schedule for the day. Are there times within the day where I am more creative or more alert? Should I be scheduling my face-to-face that during my afternoon slump after I've had too many donuts and I'm tired and having that interaction with people will reinvigorate and refocus me? That's really interesting. And then when you think about a safety context, people that are out in the field operating machines or scanning for long hours at a time, is there a mechanism that shows cognitive fatigue or their focus levels or stress levels that make basically, creates distraction from what their task is? Could it save them from an accident or a mistake that could impact other people?
Yeah, one thing to add to that, Kim, I feel like, when we look at these tools, we're always measuring workers' productivity and not really measuring their manager's ability to create a safe and productive and thriving environment. So I think this is a great way to maybe change the dialogue a little bit and think about work a little bit differently.
It's connected. It's all connected in the work ecosystem. When you think about it, name me one organization, public or private, that would not benefit from measuring and better understanding what stresses and distracts their employees. And when I say distract, I'm not just talking about this, an email here, a text there, or a snap here. It can also be your manager working behind you or people micromanaging when we could still all work in the same building. That goes without saying. But if you can measure that, if your manager comes and checks on you twice a day, if you see that there is an increase in stress of people 10 minutes before and they, a decrease in attention, you know that the manager is not doing a great job. And the way we can do that is really, to your point, is to create environments, work environments that are responsive to how we feel at a given time. Let's take a step back and look at how organizations are looking at us. When most people are recruited, they undergo personality and cognitive tests. And these tests, at the very best, measure how the people feel or are at a given moment in time. But 5 years down the road, if they stay 5 years, or even the next Monday, people can be different if they didn't sleep, etc. Most of these tests, regardless what we hear, they are more sensitive to environmental factors than most people would admit. They measure states rather than traits. And I am more than a bunch of answers to a question I would give HR, because on a Monday, I'm a different person when it comes to my wellness, my productivity, my level of fatigue than on a Friday. And this, the only way to measure that is to have not only the sensors, but the algorithms and the work ecosystem that is adapting to how you are as a person in the workplace, in order to deliver one thing that is very rare, too rare in work environments, is customized work conditions, customized work environment. We need to end this one-size-fits-all rules, because people are all different, and whatever happens in their lives, whatever their personality is, it has to be the workplace that adapts to people rather than people adapting to the workplace. And this is where we look back to this human-centric approach. And there is no better information than the information that comes from the body of people, and the body being the brain and everything else, the movement, the face, et cetera, et cetera.
First, I want to say, wow, I would love to have the future work be the workplace that adapts to people. And I think that's definitely,
it's happening. It's not just the future. We're working with, and there are cases we can share videos with you of cases that have been created by business partners. And I think that is, you just put the finger on one of our main issues when it comes to perception. You know, earlier when I mentioned the perception and what is really happening, mm-hmm. is when we talk about moving things with our minds, we all subconsciously connect to Star Wars, Jedi, sci-fi, etc. But you know, for us, it's more the past than the future. We've been doing this for years and years. Emotive is not a company that is doing science fiction. We are just doing science in action. Science, rigorous science, to solve everyday's problems. Today's problems, not just tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow, in the future of work, you'll be able to do all of these things. But there are already companies that are creating closed-loop systems, for example, for onboarding, for learning, how upskilling, as Kim mentioned. Because if the workstation is picking up that you're a bit distracted, then it might automatically change the format of information that is delivered to you, from a text to something that is more visual or more engaging, so on and so forth. This is already happening. Is it going to be better in the future? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the future, you can think of it being more embedded in, you know, in all more than technologies around us and in the workplace and at home. And then when you think about the algorithms, it's not algorithms just measuring what's happening right now, but maybe predictive algorithms where it's built enough information about you to be able to understand and predict what is going to happen next. And that's when you start thinking about and getting excited about the future applications of the technology.
More so a lot of the latter part of the discussion has been from an individual perspective, but early on in the conversation, there was a number of use cases that were mentioned that are more collaborative, right? Making music together. So can you talk a little bit about, because I mean, when we first were talking, and Kim, we've been talking about this with Moonbeam a little bit, mm-hmm. About how we can use this technology to like achieve flow states and improve interpersonal communication and maybe even co-creation of content. Because that's extremely fascinating.
Yeah, there's actually studies, one that's notable out of NYU, led by Dr. Suzanne Diker, looking at brain synchrony, the fact that, you know, you can see group dynamics and how that plays out within like just the brain patterns of the people involved. You know, we've already seen and have, projects in the past of groups coming together and having it influence a light installation. Olivier mentioned DJ, and he does a whole performance piece around music and how that influences a group of people and how that group of people can influence the music itself. You think about it in a workplace, like the fact that you could actually start forming work groups and seeing how they collaborate together and whether or not, you know, taking a step back even further, looking at like the process of that group dynamic and whether or not it's working and how you can make adjustments if you see, you know, a spike across every member in terms of the stress level or the mm-hmm. cognitive load.
So in from the design thinking lingo, right, there's a whole concept of divergent meetings and convergent meetings. Can this technology be used to quantify whether a meeting is exhibiting divergent tendencies or convergent tendencies?
Yeah, we can build on amazing work done by someone called Scott Kelso at Florida Atlantic University and his team, and Guillaume Dumas also at the University of Montreal, where these people have collected brain data on multiple people interacting to better understand not only how the brain synchronize, but how they can collaborate, how they coordinate. And I think that's the key. It's called coordination dynamics, social coordination dynamics. Kelso and his team have identified neural markers of intentional versus spontaneous coordination between people. Because sometimes you can intentionally work with others, or sometimes, you know, the cooperation occurs spontaneously. They found a brainwave that which amplitude changes depending on whether you're intentionally coordinating with others or not. There is a lot going on in scientific labs at the moment, and organizations are just picking and starting to use this data. The one thing that prevented them to do so 5 years ago, and full disclosure, I worked for Kelso almost 20 years ago. It's because the technology required thousands of cables and could not allow people to walk around, etc. Now, you know, all you need is for each person to have a brain headset and a phone to collect data. In addition to this factor about the portability, we also need to mention, and Kim can build on that, the fact that throughout the history of Emotive, we started with headsets that a lot of people, if you're into tech, science fiction, etc., you might find them cool. But for any person, it's kind of bulky maybe to walk around with such a headset. I invite you guys to look at our website to see the form factor. Of course, I'm very biased. I find it uber cool, but I can see why some people wouldn't want to walk down the street wearing a brain headset. However, we launched last year a new form factor that is just earbuds that can collect brain data. And this has changed the game literally. Because for hours, people can take calls, can work, can listen to content with the brain waves being recorded and also the movement of the heads. And with our algorithms, based on 10 years of research with a lot of electrodes, with bigger headsets on a large population of people, we are now able to measure cognitive stress and attention thanks to two electrodes that are just in your ears. So you just wear these earbuds and here you go. And that's a huge change. As a scientist, if you told me that 10 years ago, I would have said, come on, that's not possible. And yet our teams have delivered it. I'm still amazed. To be totally transparent, I was a fan of a technology before joining the company full time. I was on the board of a company since the beginning, but I joined this company because I used it all over the world, literally, and I was using it so much, I loved it so much that I wanted to work with these people on a daily basis. So this is why I might sound too much at times, but I'm still a fan of our technology, and this is not going to change.
We promised to pay him in donuts. So.
Olivia, that last comment just made me really sad because now I just realized that I've shaved my head for nothing.
You're ready for the future.
Yeah, you don't need to shave your head in order to wear our headsets, even the ones with a lot of electrodes. Actually, that's not a problem. Whether you have hair or not, the technology works.
The devices that we have out to market, the Flex is in an easy cap kind of form factor. Yep. And, you know, that looks more traditional to the EEG. And then you've got our EPOC, which is the 14 sensor, again, wet. But, you know, the challenge to that is that it's visible and it does look sci-fi. When we started thinking about how can we scale this technology and introduce it to the consumer audience, we had to look at the behaviors. You know, having somebody put on another device every day, that wasn't going to be something that would allow us to really introduce the technology to many people. You think about the devices they use today, or, you know, all of us are wearing glasses. You think about incorporating EEG into glasses and the prescription lenses, that's not scalable. We all are wearing headphones of some form factor. Being able to capitalize on the fact that the headphones touch the inner ear and allow us to really pick up clean EEG signals, you know, was a benefit to that form factor. But also because we use it every day, we listen to content, we use it to take phone calls. Combining that technology wasn't easy, but being able to, you know, that was a huge achievement that we all celebrated within the company, because now it was a form factor people were familiar with. It allowed us to be able to pick up the signals in a clean way. Again, falling back on the science and making sure that what we delivered out there was scientifically rigorous and still gave us meaningful data that we can action upon.
Yeah, the earbuds form factor is so huge. There's so much AR technology trying to read biometrics through scanning the eyes, and that adds so much hardware complexity and therefore friction to even AR being a much more meaningful product here in the near future. You know, I really appreciate kind of the overview of some of these products. It's pretty fascinating. Kim, you know, for our listeners, if they want to learn more about the products a little more in depth and the services, what's a good place for them to go to find more info?
Yeah, on our website, it's just www.emotive.com.
And that's emotiv.com.
Yes, correct.
Excellent. Well, you know, we're getting to the point where we're about to wrap up the episode, which I know is always a bit of a downer in terms of having such a engaging conversation. But I just kind of want to leave everybody with maybe some advice from both of your perspectives. Those looking to understand BCI better or integrate that, what would you say, Kim and Olivier, is some advice for you or from you to them?
I think being open and not being afraid of the technology is one thing. You know, we strive to provide it in different ways that could positively impact you from so many different standpoints. You don't have to be a neuroscientist. You don't have to be an engineer to be able to access the technology. I think it's important to be able to learn as much as you can. It's not just, you know, about being a self-quantifier and being a data geek collecting stuff, but similar to how, you know, we leverage different devices like our scale at home or our accelerometer on our watches or, you know, sleep monitors. I think this technology will become embedded into our daily lives and allow us to be able to learn something about ourselves, but also collectively about the human brain and how to be able to improve, you know, the way that we live and behave at work and at home.
There are benefits to a better measurement of brain functions for every aspect of our lives. Now the issue is how to make sense of this data. There are so many people around that claim they understand the brain, that have solutions for people to de-stress, to feel better, etc. We are a killer measurement company, and we're quite good at making sense of this data. But there are, again, no one owns all the solutions. What we're good at, we're very aware of it, but we also know the limitations of our company, and this is why we have so many great partnerships with various aspects of people who know how to design a training that is informed by our data. And I think that is the lesson, is in tech nowadays, as in science, being an Uber specialist used to be mandatory. Now there is room for generalists. I'm not the best neuroscientist. I'm not the best policymaker. I'm not the best businessman, but my strength has been to be able to not only talk to all the aspects of business and science, but to make people work with them. So the last thing I would like to say is we're often approached by people who say, how can we work with you at Emotive? And my answer is a DJ answer. You don't knock at the door of a club saying, I want to take the decks and DJ. First, you send mixtapes. So send over your projects, even if they are not neuroscience projects. I received things about cooking and chemistry. I loved it. So send your projects, send your science mixtapes, and I can promise you, you'll get an answer, and we'll have, at the very least, an amazing conversation.
I'm just laughing. This is actually fascinating. I know we've enjoyed this so much. You know, technology is made by people for people, and I know I can speak on behalf of the team here. We are so fortunate to have Kim and Olivier, both of you, and the Emotive team working on BCI and this technology. Thank you guys so much for your passion. And also spending your time today to really go through what is this technology, how it can benefit, and, you know, maybe some other ways to even look at this as well. So thanks you guys so much.
Thank you.
And it's been amazing talking to you guys. Thanks a lot for having us. And brain matters.
I love that. Yeah. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thank you guys so much for listening in. You can find us on wherever you can find your podcast. And let's work together to build a more meaningful future. Thank you.